Hello, and welcome to Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else,
a series of conversations with innovative educators at colleges and universities across the country and around the world.
This podcast is produced by faculty and staff in the Center for the Advancement of Teaching and Faculty Development at Xavier University of Louisiana.
And now, let's talk about teaching, learning, and everything else.
Hi, everyone. This is Jay Todd, Associate Director for the Center for the Advancement of Teaching and Faculty Development at Xavier University of Louisiana. And welcome to the 11th season of this podcast. We have a great season lined up for you, and we're starting things off by speaking with podcaster and blogger Lori Rudeman, the host of the Let's Fix Work podcast. Lori is a former human resources leader turned writer, speaker, and entrepreneur, known for her common sense style and blunt approach to workforce issues. Lori has been featured on major American media platforms such as NPR, The New Yorker, Vox, and CNN. She is the creator of the Cynical Girl website and Punk Rock HR, which Forbes named as one of the top 100 websites for women. She has been a contributing editor for the Conference Board Review and a contributor to online venues such as Media Bistro, AOL, and Business Insider. Her advice has been featured in a variety of publications, including The New York Times, U.S. News and World Report, USA Today, and The Wall Street Journal. Career Builder and CNN have recognized Lori as one of the top five career advisors in the United States. In short, Lori has a lot of advice to give and doesn't hesitate to offer it, as I was reminded before our interview even started.
So, so I can hear in your voice what's going on.
What's that?
You know
what's
that?
Going on?
Well, there are a couple things. Years of smoking.
Yeah.
Like, you know, from the past, I can hear that. And I can hear that you're not breathing right.
Really?
You don't breathe out of your belly. You breathe in out of your chest and your tongue. You know, when you talk, you're not supposed to use your throat. You're supposed to use your belly and your air, and you use your throat to talk.
I do.
You're abusing your vocal cords.
Yeah. I've heard people say that, but I can breathe through my belly when I do yoga, but I don't know how to do it when
it's
sitting
practice.
Here.
I know it's there are exercises
really?
You can train yourself so that you can have more of a deep and resonant voice.
Really?
But I don't really care. I mean, it sounds fine, but you're just gonna have no voice when you're like 55 years old.
I know.
That's where you're headed.
I know. I lose my voice at the end of the first day of school every year.
You do?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it comes back the next day. I'm doing all right. By like 3 p.m, I'm like, sounds like I'm chewing on gravel.
Oh, I can hear it at the end of your sentences too, because you're not taking in enough air to blow out and finish the sentences. Not to make you nervous about any of this, but in fact, I hope all of this goes on the podcast.
We'll see what we can do.
But I think, Jason, you're a teacher and you know that people can learn new things, right? And so I think you could learn how to project your voice in a different way and save your voice, especially. Like, I think if you ever wanted to do a book tour, God forbid, how would you read your own work,
I
right?
I know.
Okay. Don't you miss that. Sorry about that.
Lori keynotes events all around the world. She's appeared on stage at the 92nd Street Y at Harvard Business School, founded Glitchpath, an early stage startup focused on project management. And this past April, she started a new podcast called Let's Fix Work, in which she talks with business people and entrepreneurs who are challenging the status quo of the working world. She is also the author of the Punk Rock HR Handbook and the host of the HR Book Club. Our conversation covers a lot of topics, but I really like what she has to say about how this next generation needs to conceptualize the very nature of work and how they can prepare for that new reality. Finally, let me warn you up front that Lori and I have known each other for a very long time. Anyway, stick around and enjoy the conversation.
Hi, Lori. Thanks for taking some time to speak with us today.
Yeah, I'm really happy to be here. I'm excited and a little nervous.
Well, we'll see what we can do. Let me start with a bit of a cliche, but to address the elephant in the room, this podcast is primarily targeted at college faculty members, and there's often a tension, at least from what I've seen, between academic world and the business world. Career readiness is a term that rankles a lot of my colleagues. So what would you say to a faculty member or a college administrator listening who thinks they don't have anything to learn from someone such as yourself?
Wait, are you telling me there are teachers out there who are unteachable? Is that what you're saying? I'm shocked.
Let's say shocked. Let's say resistant.
Nobody. Oh, I'm even more shocked about that. Yeah. All right. Well, you know, nobody is born knowing anything other than how to breathe, right? You know, and maybe how to nurse, right? That's all we're born with. And so I think everybody should be open to learning something. And unless you're born of wealth in this world, you have to work. And I think it's all of our collective responsibilities, if we're going to work, to make sure that we're ready to be of service to one another and also open to learning. And so I think as a professor, whether you're teaching anthropology or you're teaching dentistry, you are in a position to teach people not only technical skills, but also how to be a decent human being. And isn't that what career readiness is all about? Yes, it's about work ethic and about making sure resumes are right. But most employers just want the basics. They just want good kids who come out of college with an understanding on how to be a good citizen. And I think if you start with career readiness from that perspective, that's a good place to begin.
That's great. That's great. Thank you. All right. So tell us a little bit about your newest project, the Let's Fix Work podcast. You've had some really intriguing guests on your show so far, some who are working from the inside to change how Americans think about work, others who are more inclined to walk away from the old model and start from scratch. So what are you hoping to accomplish through this podcast?
Well, first of all, a lot of people tell me they listen to my podcast and I think they're lying. So have you really listened to it?
Absolutely,
have you heard it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who is your favorite guest?
I really liked, I was catching up this weekend when I was mowing the lawn, and I liked this because I'd missed when I wasn't commuting. I wasn't listening too much, but
sure.
I like that Stanford professor.
Bob Sutton. Yeah.
I like what
great.
He had to say.
Thanks.
I thought he was pretty interesting.
He was one of my favorites.
Yeah. The guy who just wanted to burn it all down, I think.
Scott Stratton. Yeah, yeah. Burn it. And he's a college professor too at Sheridan University up in, or Sheridan College up in Canada. There's a thing with academics world on my podcast. Well, I will tell you, there are a couple things I'm trying to do with Let's Fix Work. I've worn a couple different hats in my life. I've been an HR lady and a recruiter. I've been a writer and a speaker, and I've also been a business owner and an entrepreneur. What I'm really trying to do is deconstruct myths around work, because I've learned a lot of lessons the hard way. And I think more importantly, I'm trying to deprioritize work in our culture in favor of relationships and in favor of being more human. And because I have this platform, it's not like I have amazing, great ideas about work, but there are other people who have really big ideas around work, like Bob Sutton, who you mentioned, who wrote a book called The No Asshole Rule. I hope we can say that. It's a great book.
Absolutely.
And it's about leadership and about being your best self at work. And I just want to help people share good ideas and amplify good ideas. And most importantly, I want to help people fix work by fixing themselves. Because I think if you start with the core of who you are and you focus on what's important to you and what your values are and what your priorities are, you're going to have a better work experience and you're going to know what you're willing to tolerate and what you stand for and what your boundaries are. So that's what I'm hoping to do with Let's Fix Work. It's a big, like, melting pot of ideas, and I'm only like 22 or 23 episodes in, but hopefully we're having good discussions about life, because life is work and work is life.
No, it's really great show.
Thanks.
Like I said, I was glad I got a little caught up this past weekend with it.
Well, I think you have to say that because you've known me since like 1990. So you have to say nice things about it. But what I really hope is that you don't have to be interested in work to listen to it. Like, that's a really important goal. And so as I learn how to podcast, I'm also learning how to be less uptight on air, and I'm learning how to speak about work in a really regular way. At least I'm trying to do that, so that if you're a student or a professor or an HR professional, no matter who you are, there's something in that podcast for you. Because again, nobody that I know has really been born of wealth, and we all work. So yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I'm honestly not really all that interested in work.
Who is?
But
Jason, I've known you forever. You are not interested in work. That's 100% true.
But I've been enjoying the show. It's really interesting. Okay, so this leads me, like I said, really to why I wanted to have you on our podcast. As college faculty and staff, we spend the majority of our time teaching, advising, and hopefully mentoring the next generation of the workforce. Whether they're going to be future doctors or pharmacists, like many of us are, ours are, or lawyers, teachers, whatever. So if anyone's going to fix work, it's going to be that next generation, Gen Z, I guess we're working on.
Yeah, I don't know
now.
What they're called. Yeah, right.
So again,
so,
I guess.
So you think?
Yeah. Where can we go? What do we need to do to help them fix the working world that they're going to inherit from us?
Yeah, you know, I'm not so sure that they're going to fix things in as much as they are going to inherit things, right? And it's kind of a chicken and an egg question. The current generation, in my perspective, so baby boomers, Gen Xers, and millennials are in the workforce right now, and they're really screwing things up. And so I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done around the basic repair and maintenance and upgrading of our infrastructure, whether that's fair pay or discrimination or bullying or harassment. There's a lot that people can do right now to address what is really low-hanging fruit. I like to start with just basic concept of fair pay. There's a company called Salesforce that implemented fair and equal pay in their workforce. So they brought men and women to parity, and it only cost them, and I'm going to say only, it only cost them $3 million. But do you know how much is spent on lawsuits in America because people aren't paid fairly? So today happens to be equal pay day for African American women. That's the day that we're recording. So it takes them all the way through this day in the year to earn as much as a white man. And that's just unacceptable. And that is something that we can solve tomorrow. So I hate the idea that we're waiting for some future generation to fix a problem, because we could fix that today.
But we still need to think about what we want to teach them. And that's really kind of my interest. So what can we be teaching tomorrow's workforce? What do you think their needs are going to be? In particular, also kind of say this as someone who's got a 17-year-old in the house. But,
which, by the way, how did that happen?
I
that's weird.
Because
aren't we 17, right? I mean, didn't we just go to a Nine Inch Nails concert?
No kidding,
like, God.
Especially this idea when, you know, this idea I started telling my students about and also my kids about, which is this idea that things have changed so radically now. You know, my dad got out of the Army in 1974, got himself an entry-level job as an attorney, staff attorney with U.S. Steel, and then spent, I think, about 40 years working his way up, retired as general counsel. And that's just doesn't happen anymore, right?
Not at all.
You know, I mean, what are the statistics that the next generation is going to have, what, five career, not five jobs, but five unique careers?
Yeah, I've heard
lifetime.
Five to seven. Absolutely.
Yeah. And some don't even exist yet, right?
That's right.
So how do we prepare them for these jobs that they aren't thinking about and may not even have any conception of?
Right. Well, you know, as someone who's had a couple of different careers in her life, and I'm 43 years old, I've gone from recruiter and HR professional to writer and then to business owner. And now I'm podcasting and working on a book proposal. The thing that I wish somebody would have taught me very early on was financial acumen. Really making better decisions about money. That was not taught to me at all. And I look at the rate of savings and the rate of spending and the rate of student loans with the next generation of workers. And financial acumen is a skill that's going to be needed more than ever, especially when we think about the future of work, because the future of work is less and less aligned with an employer and more aligned around projects or teams. So you're not going to have that old benefits package like your dad had, or that I even had when I worked at Monsanto or Pfizer, or all those other evil corporations, right? That's not going to exist in the future. And until we as Americans get behind like basic income or universal health care, the kids these days are going to need to save their money and really start to think about retirement at an earlier and earlier in age. So first of all, start with financial acumen. Second of all, teach them to be good citizens and vote in their own interest. The voting rate among youth is just disgusting. And I get it. There aren't a lot of great candidates, but even when there aren't a lot of great candidates, you can still cast a ballot with nothing on the ballot or a write-in candidate. You can still go and exercise the franchise. And I think teaching kids to vote, making it a national holiday, doing whatever you can do to get people involved in their community that way is important. And also, I think the final thing we can teach kids about the future of work is to be charitable and to demonstrate empathy, because so many people go into the workforce with the attitude of, I'm not here to make friends. It's all about me. And you don't get anywhere in this world if you don't make friends and you're not likable. And I've learned this firsthand. You know, I've made every mistake out there. So I think between financial acumen, teaching people to be good citizens, and also teaching them to be charitable and empathetic, right there are attributes for a good career that'll take you from dentistry to pharmacy to working in a lab to whatever you do in your world. That'll carry through. It's a good thread.
Yeah. One thing you were talking about, and one of your guests was talking about this in a recent episode, this idea of kind of the project-based workforce and this almost kind of portability, where we really are kind of shifting from this, I work for this company and I do what they do, to, I don't want to say the gig economy because it's not that, but I guess this idea that I have a set of skills and right now I'm going to provide it to for this project at this location or this company, and then I'm going to provide it at this place. So it seems like that is becoming more and more of a way of life.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And not only are they doing it within America, we start to think about the global economy. So someone who has a PhD in English in Louisiana will soon be competing to teach students through a platform. And they won't just be competing to teach English literature with other American professors. They'll be competing in the global economy because some French professor who gets his benefits from the government and doesn't need to earn as much money will be able to enter the marketplace and lower the wages for professors. So it's not just that we've got problems in America with the future of work and the structure of work. We're going to start competing in a global economy. But that is where we're going, that you're going to be like a MacGyver and you have a set of skills. And maybe this day you're working for a large Fortune 500 company and next week you're working for a small startup. You can do that if you live in Europe and you have all of these infrastructures and benefits at your in your backpack, right? You don't have to worry about retirement or maternity care. In America, it's a really challenging future that we haven't figured out. And so I think getting the next generation of students and workers to think about what they want and then creating policy around it to support them as workers is also very important.
That's great. So let's bring it back to your focus, which you mentioned a little bit earlier. And you've brought up a few times now, which is you kind of say in your podcast that your philosophy is that in order to fix work, we need to fix ourselves. And so again, you know, in academia, how do we, is there a way for us to help prevent our students from becoming broken in the first place?
Well, aren't we all broken? Isn't that how that works? I mean, not to be all Debbie Downer, but... Well, all right. So we are all indeed broken. And I think sometimes what happens is that we get to a certain place in our lives, whether we're new workers or older workers, and we just are bystanders in our career. And we watch things happen to us instead of being more active participants in our own lives. And so for me, I think professors, what they can really do is teach kids to never give up on themselves and to never feel as if they're victims to hegemonic corporate power run amok. You can absolutely, first of all, you absolutely have agency when you work for someone, even though everything in corporate America tries to beat that out of you. From performance reviews, which are awful, and I don't wish that on any student right now, to the 3.5% merit increase that you're supposed to feel grateful for in this world, right? I mean, everything corporate America and in the gig economy and in the future of work really wants to beat down on your soul. But if you can remember who you are and what you stand for and what you believe in and why you're working, it makes it a little bit easier. And it makes it also easier to say yes and to say no. Now, I know what I work for. I work for my family. I work to provide, you know, I provide an income to my nieces and nephews for college. Like, I'm saving for them. I take care of animals. I volunteer in my community. I try to be charitable. I exactly know what I'm doing when I go to work, but I think a lot of people forget about that. So it's really important for me to use my platform, my podcast, to help people reconnect with their purpose. What's the meaning of suffering and what's the meaning of going into work every day? If you have to do it, we all have to do it, why are you doing it? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a long-winded answer to the point, which is I want to help people find their purpose. And I think if professors can stay true to that and also help students remember their purpose, we're going to improve the world of work and the world that we live in.
That's interesting, because that's often, I think, especially in for those of us in the humanities, which is a struggle we find, or an argument we find ourselves making a lot, which is we're teaching you to be ultimately kind of a better human being, right?
Yeah.
Through the study of literature, yeah, or history or whatever. And then trying to justify how that will transfer into the workplace. And it sounds like you're kind of saying that's exactly what they need for the workplace.
Yeah.
And not so much,
I think,
the finely detailed technical skills that might not be in place in 5 years.
There are so many employers out there who are now saying this exact line. I don't care what kind of skills you have. Just show up, be accountable, be kind, don't lie, have a work ethic. If you have those attributes, I can train you to be a sales professional, or I can train you to be a customer success manager, or whatever these newfangled jobs are, or a developer, you know, or whatever. But you have to have a good set of bones, a good way of thinking about the world. You have to have quick cognitive processing speeds in order to survive in the working world. And I think you also have to have an understanding of what it's like to interact with people and have empathy towards other individuals' stories. And that's where literature and poetry and art is so handy. Give me someone who has studied poetry and they really know when to be kind in a meeting when other people are jumping on and piling on and being cruel. Give me somebody who has read Kurt Vonnegut and you've got somebody who's got a sense of humor at work and doesn't take themselves too seriously. So I think the role of humanities really does translate to creating a good workforce. Absolutely.
So do you think we've turned a corner from this way of businesses thinking everybody needs to be highly trained in a very specific way before they even have a shot at a job, which kind of took over in the, I would say as we were getting out of college in the late 90s, and then especially in the kind of early 2000s, it was kind of like you need to have a bachelor's degree in this, this, and this just to kind of apply. Have we turned a corner from that way of thinking?
No. I think companies want their cake and eat it too. Yeah, want to eat their cake and have it too, or whatever that saying is. I don't mean to be cliched. But I think a bachelor's degree is a stamp of approval that somebody thinks you're smart. Like, I really believe that. So recruiters will often write a job description and say, bachelor's degree is required. And that's because they have very little faith in the public school system in America. So what I say to those individuals, my recruiting brethren, is that if you're so concerned about the public school system in America, why don't you get your butts in there and volunteer and make a difference, or vote for politicians and policies that enable kids to be smarter instead of degrading the public school system. And I can go on about that for hours, but there are so many.
LeBron James.
Right, exactly right. Or put your money where your mouth is. But I think we also require a bachelor's degree from an HR standpoint and a recruiting standpoint because we're lazy. And more there are people who are job seekers who are questioning this.
Mm-hmm.
And I would believe there will probably be cases, like case law in the future, against this, because we have all of these biases and burdens that put the onus on certain protected minorities and certain protected working classes instead of opening up a job to everybody. So I would imagine that more and more, just like we're removing the requirement that people say whether or not they've been convicted of a felony in the past, we'll start to remove educational requirements and start to test out through test out through assessments and things like that to make sure people are qualified.
You said a dirty word for academic.
Assessment. I don't like assessments either. And I don't like the intersection of AI and machine learning and assessments, but that's another podcast for another day.
Okay. If we can, let's switch gears here a little bit.
Sure.
We've been talking, just kind of wind things down a little. We've been talking about what faculty and academic staff can do to better enable our students to change the way work works. What about us though? Again, a lot of my colleagues hate when the university is described as a business, but like it or not, it's a place of work. What advice do you have for how we can fix ourselves as workers and ultimately our workplace?
Here's what I don't understand about professors. When did it ever become a goal to work at the same place for your entire life? When did that ever breed creativity and innovation? When has it ever been a good idea to stay in one place and not see the world and work with new people? And I just don't get that. So the whole idea that everybody's running towards tenure is an unfortunate system that I know professors don't control. And if they want to get ahead, they have to participate in that. But what is the alternative? There's got to be another alternative to this that benefits you as workers, because I don't think fighting for tenure is it. Like, if that's the ultimate goal for your career, that's sad. You know, I want you to be able to teach in Louisiana and teach in Paris and teach in Turkey and Istanbul if you want to, and not lose your benefits and to have the same rights and privileges as a regular worker. So that really breaks my heart. And I don't have a solution for it, but I think maybe the next generation of professors should really try to focus on that, because that system is jacked up and I don't get it. And I don't think it benefits anybody, because you have to play a political game while you're trying to teach and while you're trying to research. And while every job has its level of politics, that is some unhealthy politics in the academic system. So I'm not a fan of that. But I think one of the things that you can do as professors is stop trying to make yourself seem like you're not workers, because I work with many business professors who want to be professorial and don't want to see themselves doing the dirty work of doing work. And you're doing work, you're workers, right? And so you have to remember that. And then you have to do all of the things I just told you: have empathy for one another, respect your colleagues, practice good financial acumen, like build your personal brand. All of the things that apply to the lowly workers like me apply to you as well. And I think if you start to see yourselves as workers, life gets a little bit better.
Excellent. Thank you.
Drop the mic. Oh my God. Jason, I can't believe we are old enough to be in a position where we're recording a podcast. You're a professor. I'm a business owner. I don't think your students realize how fast it goes.
Oh God, no.
They don't.
Not at all.
They have no idea. Weren't we just in college? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I tell them that. I go in all the time. I say I graduated almost 20 years ago. No, I graduated almost 30 years ago. Sorry.
Oh, Jesus. Oh man, we are old. I don't know. It's ridiculous. I think though there is something to be said for our generation. This is probably what every generation says, but thinking we're not as old as we really are. But I look at like my mom and her generation and your parents' generation, and they just were resistant to technology. They didn't even like to keyboard, right? You know? And now they're all on Facebook or whatever, but they're I would like to think that I'm trying to at least keep my skills current and try to stay a part of the workforce, but that just by saying all that made me old, didn't it? Yeah.
I don't know. You know, like you said, with tenure, once you got it, then you don't have to worry about that stuff anymore. So.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Just kick back, put your feet up on the desk. Well, thanks for having me today.
Oh, well, thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again. And listen, if anybody wants to figure out where I am, are you going to do an exit or do you want me to say where they can find me?
I've got an exit, but why don't you, we'll put up the links and stuff like that, but why don't you do a little something here yourself?
Okay. Well, I hope none of this gets edited out. That's all I'm saying to your engineer. Cause I think it's just fun to catch up with you. I'm at letsfixwork.com for the podcast, and I'm at Lori Rudiman, which nobody can spell. So I have a little hack for that. It's worklifecats.com.
Really?
That's all I ever talk about. Work life cats. There you go.
Did not know that, but that's good to know.
There you go. All right.
I hope you've enjoyed listening to my conversation with Lori Rudiman as much as I did recording it. I think my favorite piece of advice, besides the breathing tips, is the belief that being successful in any job has to start with being a kind and decent human being. You can find links to Lori's website and the Let's Fix Work podcast on our website at cat.xula.edu. That's cat.xula.edu. Just click on the podcast link in the menu. If you're new to our podcast, please consider subscribing and having our bi-weekly episodes sent directly to your email or downloaded directly to your favorite podcast player. And while you're there, be sure to check out our blog, Cat Food, in which we reflect upon and explore a wide variety of educational topics. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this installment of Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else. For more information, please visit our website at cat.xula.edu.
That's cat.xula.edu.
Until next time, keep on teaching, learning, and everything else.